then when we talk about some of the results which I presented in the recent Penn State workshop.
You might need to speak up a little bit.
Okay, so what I'm going to talk about are some of the recent results which I presented in a recent workshop in Penn State on loop quantum cosmology. And I was asked to give an ILQG
Sorry, this is Marseille. We don't hear anything. We heard Jorge and Abai before, but now it's near silent.
Hello, can you hear?
Now it's better. Yeah, now it's better, thank you.
Okay, so the title of my talk is Loop Quantum Cosmos Are Never Singular, and maybe the title is slightly provocative, but let me first state my assumptions, what is the premise of my talk. So I'll be working completely in the regime of effective dynamics, which has appeared in some models of loop quantum cosmology. And the faith in this dynamics results from that whichever models we have tested so far where the quantization has been performed rigorously and where numerical simulations have been done, the modified Friedman dynamics which appears from some of the calculations turn out to be very robust. It's much more surprising if you look at the assumptions, underlying assumptions, that it turns out to be very successful in describing lots of situations. So I will be completely working in effective dynamics. I'll not be, none of my results as it is go to either full LQC, which is loop quantum cosmology, or may have any implications for the full quantum theory. So this is the first caveat. Secondly, I'll be working completely in the homogeneous cosmology. In fact, only isotropic. Sorry. So I will be working. I think there is some echo. So I will be working completely in the isotropic homogeneous cosmologies. All of the conclusions will only apply in this particular situation. None of the results are anything obvious or go to in the inhomogeneous setting. So let us go to the first slide, which is the outline of the talk. So I will give you a brief motivation. First of all, what is the problem we are interested in? Why are we doing all this? Then I'll come to the features of effective dynamics. And since some of the people in the audience may not be familiar with loop quantum cosmology or even loop quantum gravity, I'll give a very, very brief outline of how do we achieve that, what are the main elements to do this quantization, and what is effective dynamics. And then I will come to the complete classification of classical singularities in FRW cosmology, which is what theoretical cosmologists have done in last couple of years. So as all of us know about the traditional singularities in classical cosmology, which are the Big Bang and Big Crunch. But since the advent of the dark energy models and discovery of some exact solutions in GR, there have been a whole classification which has been built, which include many singularities which are popularly known as future singularities, because they are typically studied in the future evolution of the model. So the Big Bang and Big Crunch only form a subclass, and there is four other kinds of singularities in classical FRW cosmology. I'll be only talking about these singularities. So then I will illustrate these singularities, and I will illustrate the resolution or the non-resolution of these singularities in the effective dynamics of loop quantum cosmology using a model. So this model is not very general, but it is general enough to include all the singularities which are available. So this is a nice feature of this model, that by just changing the parameters of the model, you can get any singularity you want in classical cosmology. We'll apply this model in loop quantum cosmology, effective dynamics, and we'll see what happens. So this is just the illustration. So the conclusions which I will show you are not based on this model. They are based on a much more general analysis of the singularities in effective loop quantum cosmology, which I will not give you the much proof, but it will be in the paper which I'll be putting up on archive in a couple of days. And then I'll conclude with a summary and further direction. So let's come to the motivation. So in classical cosmology, in GR, the singularities are the boundaries of space-time. And these are the boundaries beyond which space-time cannot be extended. And some of the common characteristics are that the geodesics cannot be extended to arbitrary values of the affine parameters. The space-time curvature diverges. And if we take any object or any detector, then it's crushed to zero volume and it's inevitably destroyed. So this is what is the common characteristic of singularity. And interestingly, singularities were first discovered in the simplest models. Like if we look at the history of GR, and when they were first found, they were considered as artifacts of highly symmetric models. And people believed, or people at least conjectured in the very beginning, that perhaps if we have inhomogeneous situations, then these singularities will not occur. But actually it turned out in the mid-60s, when the singularity theorems by Penrose, Hawking, and Garrosh were proved, that the singularities are generic features of classical space-time. They are not artifacts of any symmetry-reduced models or homogeneous situations. So those singularities in GR are unavoidable and bad things, perhaps for GR, but they are actually the windows of new physics in quantum gravity, because they point out to the limitations of the classical theory, and I think like this is existence of these singularities is perhaps the strongest motivation to look for underlying theory of the quantum space-time. And it is widely expected, like by different branches of quantum gravity, be it loop quantum gravity or string theory, that a quantum theory of space-time is generally expected to cure all space-like singularities, which are the physical singularities. So what is our idea here? Our idea is to use the technology of loop quantum gravity, which has been successfully applied to symmetric models, such as loop quantum cosmology, which is the quantization of homogeneous and isotropic models, black hole space-times and isotropic models. A lot of work has been done in the last 7 years to apply the technology of loop quantum gravity to these situations. And in loop quantum cosmology, the key prediction is existence of a quantum bounce at the Planck scale and the absence of Big Bang and Big Crunch singularity. So this is the models which are k equal to 0 and k equal to 1 models, they have been completely quantized for some forms with some matter. And here, when I use matter, it just to make it clear, it doesn't mean dust. It means any general form of matter, which includes all perfect fluids and may even include scalar fields and so on. So, and these results have been confirmed in variety of models, which I'll show you. And recently, by the Madrid group, there has been some progress in trying to understand the inhomogeneous models, such as the Gaudi spacetimes. And they have shown that the bounce can persist in certain situations. So this is very exciting. So it's not only the homogeneous situations, we are already stepping into inhomogeneous situations. So if you look at it, the situation looks very similar. It looks like almost like perhaps a flashback with a different twist. So we can ask the questions that is singularity resolution, which we see in loop quantum cosmology, an artifact of symmetry reduction? Like people can, it's a very genuine criticism which people can put that perhaps all this is happening because we have a homogeneous space-time. And maybe in the homogeneous space-time, singularity will not be resolved. It's completely possible. We don't know the answer for that. Or one can be more pragmatic, and one can ask the question that, is there a non-singularity theorem for quantum symmetry? Like, if quantum gravity is expected to resolve all space-like singularities, then maybe there has to exist a quantum converse of the singularity theorems of Penrose, Hawking, and Garrosh. This is not the aim of this talk at all. Like, our aim is much more modest. And the question we are interested in is that, is singularity resolution generic in isotropic flat homogeneous loop quantum cosmology? So far, works have been done with specific matter models like massless scalar field or cosmological constant, inflationary potential, and so on. What we are and the complete quantization has been done. Our aim is to go a step forward using the effective dynamics of loop quantum cosmology, assuming it actually, and probing further. And what happens for general matter models? What happens for all the singularities, not just a specific one? And the question we want to answer is, does loop quantum cosmology resolve all space-like singularities, including all future singularities and past singularities, all kinds of singularities? We want to give a general treatment. And are there any counterexamples? So here I would like to, most of the people may not be aware, but there was a recent work by Portsmouth Group, by Caleto, Cordoso, Kevin Vandersloot, and David Vance, in which they considered a model, and this model had a particular kind of singularity in classical cosmology. And they showed that if they try to do the effective dynamics with this model, then the space-time curvature is not bounded by quantum geometry. And their conclusion was that perhaps there is a singularity in this model. So we would like to see like what is actually happening in such situations. But here, I would like to point out that already in literature, 3 months ago, there was a counterexample shown that quantum geometry effects, if you look from the viewpoint of effective dynamics, will not always bind the space-time curvature. So this is, it's, the problem already exists, so we have to understand deeply what is actually happening. So as I stated earlier, I will state my caveats again. I'm going to assume effective space-time picture with arbitrary matter. So it, people can consider it as a big assumption. People who have faith in effective picture by whatever means, they may think like it is perhaps a reasonable assumption, but this is my assumption. So everyone can have his own take on this assumption. I'm going to exclude all higher order quantum effects resulting from state-dependent properties. What it means is that I'm just going to take the effective Hamiltonian without any corrections from the state-dependent properties. The reason is that in the numerical simulations, which we have done for certain models, these state-dependent properties have shown to be of negligible effect. For the states, we generally will be interested in. The states we'll be interested in are the states which become semi-classical at late times, which lead to a large macroscopic universe. And for such states, there are very stringent conditions on the fluctuations and dispersion and so on already. So the expectation is that maybe these effects will be very small. So this is the assumption. I state again, I'll be working completely in homogeneous space-time. I'll be working completely in the effective description. All these results will assume that if the effective description breaks down somewhere, these results will not hold. So they don't go to full LQC also, and they don't have, they have limited implications in general for the quantum theory. So the idea will be we assume the effective picture and see what happens. So the picture is very simple. Let's go to the next slide. This is slide 4. So this is just a very, very brief review for LQC, what is actually happening. So we are interested in quantization of k equal to 0 flat FRW model. So the slices are homogeneous, the spatial slices are homogeneous and isotropic, and the spatial manifold is R cube. And since it's R cube, that it has a Euclidean action, and we can introduce a fiducial flat matrix on the manifold, and then we can introduce a fiducial triad E naught and co-triad omega naught. And the basic variables in the quantization we follow as in loop quantum gravity. They are the Aschecker connection A and the triad E's. And due to the symmetries of the model, we can write down these A's and E's in this particular form, the first equation, which is A equal to C times V naught to the power minus 1/3, where V naught is the fiducial volume of a cell which we have to fix in this non-compact manifold to define symplectic structure. So this is a necessity. We are not assuming any torus topology or anything for the manifold. We are assuming a non-compact manifold as cosmologists work with. And V0 is the volume of that cell. And the physics should be independent of this regulator. That is the main thing. And as you can see that because of the symmetries of the homogeneous and isotropic space-time, A's and E's are, the whole information about A's and E's are, is in C's and P's, which are the coefficients of the Aschecker connection and the triad. And the basic variables for the phase space are C and P, which satisfy the Poisson brackets C, P equal to 8 pi G gamma by 3, where gamma is the Barbaro emergency parameter, which we fix equal to 0.2375 from the black hole thermodynamic calculation. So what is the relation of these C's and P's with the quantities we know from cosmology? So for that, we have to recall that what is our underlying metric, which is the Robertson-Walker metric, which is given by ds square equal to minus dt square plus a square, and then the dr square plus r square d theta square. And the relation to the scale factor and the quantities of the metric is that p, which is a triad, is a square. So it actually measures the geometry. And c, which is a connection, is equal to gamma a dot in the as a classical relation. So c is like the measure of a dot, is the velocity of the scale factor, the connection. And the P is like the scale factor. Heuristically, you can think of it like this. So as in loop quantum gravity, the elementary variables for the quantization are the holonomies of the connection. And the holonomies of the connection, which are given by H, over the straight edges labeled by mu, is of this particular form. Cos mu C by 2, identity operator, plus 2 sine mu C by 2, tau K, which are related to the polyspin matrices, and mu ranges from minus infinity to infinity. The elements of the holonomies are of the form exponential I mu C by 2, and they generate algebra of almost periodic functions. And we can look at the Hilbert space, which is we can construct the kinematical Hilbert space, and it turns out to be the square integrable functions of the Bohr compactification of the real line. So this is the kinematics. I've given you the basic variables, C's and P's. This is the metric we are working with, and this is the kinematical Hilbert space. So the next step is to quantize the constraints, to first express the constraints in terms of holonomies and fluxes, and then to quantize them. So that the only non-trivial constraint in the theory is the Hamiltonian constraint. And for the flat model, it is given by this. So we are now in slide number 5, next slide, which is the title Hamiltonian constraint. So, and as you can see that in the flat model, the constraint is very simple, the gravitational part of the constraint. So the N is the lap sphere, which we will put equal to 1. FAB is the field strength of the connection. And then is the term E dot E divided by determinant of E. The idea is to express the gravitational part and similarly the matter part. The matter part of the constraint will only have determinants of E, because the matter part is very simple. If you take a massless scalar, it's like P phi square by 2V, 2 times the volume, and the volume is related to the determinant of E. So if we understand the gravitational part, how it is quantized, the matter part goes in the same way. So the procedure is that we express the gravitational part in terms of the elementary variables for quantization, which are the holonomies, and their Poisson brackets with the volume. So the first step is to regulate the E dot E by determinant of E term, because it is obvious that this term is divergent, suppose if you go to the zero volume case. So here we use the classical identity of the phase space, which was discovered by Thomas Thiemann in 1998. And the idea is to write the term as a trace over the Poisson bracket of the holonomies with the volume. If you look at the, if you quantize this expression, if you look at the eigenvalues have a peak. But the problem is that the peak depends on the fiducial volume of the cell, which we have introduced to define symplectic structure. So it leads to completely, it has no physical meaning, this peak. So you can always change this peak if you change the regulator. The second step is to write down four field strength tensor in terms of holonomies, and then we quantize. It's similar to what we do in the gauge theories. I'll not go through the quantization details because they are not necessary for this talk. This is just to include something so that the whole picture is clear. Eventually, what happens is that after you have done the whole quantization, there are two kinds of quantum modifications which can come in general. The first modification comes from the field strength. And these are the effects which are solely responsible for the quantum bounds. Like the bounds which is seen in LQC arises purely from this. You can completely forget about the E dot E term, and you can just regulate FAB, and everything will work. The reason is because E dot E term for the natural choices of parameters has anyway negligible effect. And secondly, the inverse triad corrections, which is what I mean by determinant of E corrections, which are also for the matter part, they're not tied to any curvature scale in the flat model. The reason is that they actually measure the intrinsic curvature if intrinsic curvature is non-zero. In the flat model, intrinsic curvature is vanishing, so you cannot tie it to any curvature scale. And I think like one has to be careful because many times in the phenomenology papers of loop quantum cosmology, people try to study inverse scale factor effects in the flat model for the non-compact cases. And to me, they are completely unphysical, like even though I have worked on them for a long time, but that was a mistake. So like the reason is that it's precisely that the peak of the peak of the eigenvalues of this inverse scale factor is completely arbitrary. It's tied to the fiducial cell. You cannot remove it. So the main message here is that you can quantize the gravitational constraint and the matter constraint. The main modifications come from the field strength, and this is what we'll be interested in. You can completely ignore the matter part, that the quantum geometry affects the matter part or not, because it anyway has the inverse triad. You can even completely ignore the inverse triad in the gravitational part, and most of the things will go through. So this will be our demand. Okay, so what do we do to extract physics? So there is a lot of work which has been done behind this slide, like for last 5 years. So this is just a
slide. So you're in the next slide, right?
Yeah, we are on the slide 6. So to extract physics, whatever I've shown you is not sufficient because I never talked to you about the physical Hilbert space and so on. So it's a very difficult problem. In all the cases which we have studied, there is a different technique which we have to use, like it's like the things don't generally go through very easily. So first of all, we have to isolate a time variable. So what it means is that since we have a time frozen picture, as such, what we have to do is that we have to consider intrinsic clock. Let us say we introduce a maskless scalar and treat it as a time in some situations, globally or locally. We have to find a physical Hilbert space, which is a difficult problem, and the inner product, and the suitable Dirac observables. We have to and once we have found this whole set, we have to construct semi-classical states at late times. Let us say we choose the data such that we are on the classical trajectory today at low curvatures, and then we evolve the state backwards using the quantum constraint. And then we compare the expectation values of the observables with the classical trajectory, and the differences are the predictions of the theory. So this quantization has been performed rigorously for various models. So the below is the list, which started in 2006 with a maskless scalar. And then there's been work on the closed universe, recently on the anti-de-Sitter and de-Sitter universe. And recent, and there is much more recent work by on the Bianchi 1 models, on which now we have a great control. The Madrid group has also been working on the Gaudi models, which have made a lot of progress. And we are also finishing the work on inflationary potential, in which one can show that if you take the inflationary initial conditions and evolve them backward, the space-time in LQC is past complete. So this is a lot of work has gone into this. And I think that one of the very interesting features of loop quantum cosmology is that it admits an effective space-time description. So there's a quantization which doesn't know about time. And what we get as a predictions are only the relations between, let us say, the volume and the scalar field. But we know from classical cosmology that given FRW metric, given our Robertson-Walker metric, and given the classical solutions, there is a proper time there which we can integrate out, and we can again get the relation between V's and the phi's. So the idea is that people have done a lot of work in trying to find out an effective space-time picture of loop quantum cosmology. And it actually turns out that for all these cases, which I have listed you below, where the quantization has been performed rigorously, and in most of the cases where numerical simulations have been done, the states, which are semi-classical at late times, they actually follow this effective trajectory, which has been found from the effective space-time. So I'll just highlight you the how it is found. There was, Victor Tavares gave a very nice talk not so long ago in ILQGS, so I'll not go into the details of that. So the idea is that this effective picture is obtained using geometric formulation of quantum mechanics, where the Hilbert space is regarded as a quantum phase space, which has a fiber bundle structure. The base space of this fiber bundle is a classical phase space, and the fibers of this bundle are correspond to the states with the same values of the expectation values of a set of conjugate variables, let us say Q's and P's. And the idea is to find the horizontal sections of this fiber bundle, and then they will correspond to an effective Hamiltonian, which will in general have different, which will lead to a different dynamics from the classical Hamiltonian. And this is the work of Victor Tavares and the PhD thesis of Josh Willis in 2004 in Penn State. So I have to caution you here that this effective Hamiltonian picture has been derived by Victor Tavares only for the case of maskless scalar. And the PhD work of Josh Willis was in the old quantization of LQC, which was shown not to have the correct infrared or the ultraviolet limit. But if one looks at the thesis carefully, it can be extended to the improved quantization of loop quantum cosmology. The surprising thing is that even though these guys have done the calculations in a very restricted way of the choosing particular matter models, the effective equations turn out to be hugely successful. For example, in the closed universe, where it's k equal to 1 with the maskless scalar, or anti-de-Sitter universe, or a de-Sitter universe, and even for the massless scalar, which is a non-zero potential. So I think like we have to have some faith in them. Okay, so next, let's go to the next slide, page 7, and from here, I will change the gear because I'll be only talking about effective dynamics. So what is this effective Hamiltonian? This effective Hamiltonian can be, which I also put in the parentheses as improved dynamics because it leads to the correct QV and IR limit, which is the work which has been done from 2006, which is known as the improved quantization of loop quantum cosmology. So this is effective Hamiltonian has this particular form, which is in front of you in the red equation, minus 3 by 8 pi g gamma square, sine scale lambda beta by lambda square times volume, V is the volume, plus H matter. H matter doesn't get any quantum geometric modifications. Beta is the variable, which is C divided by P to the power half. and V is the volume. So it's going from C and P, I'm just going to beta and V. This is what I'm doing, just a canonical transformation. And beta V satisfy our conjugate variables, and they satisfy the Poisson bracket 4 pi g gamma. Lambda is a parameter which comes from quantum geometry. It is related to the area gap, which we put in the while quantizing field strength tensor. Unfortunately, there is no expression for that here on the slide, but you can think of it as lambda equal to some constants of order 1 times LP square, or times LP, sorry. Lambda has the dimensions of the Planck length. So people who remember what was C, they now will immediately know what is beta. So C was like A dot, and P was A square. So beta is like A dot by A. So classically, beta is like the Hubble rate already. And now, how do we find the modified dynamics? It's very simple exercise. We just take the Hamilton's equations for beta dot and V dot. And if you have the matter fields like phi and P phi, phi, then we look at phi dot and P phi dot, and we just solve. So the first equation which you obtain is the modified Friedmann equation from this Hamiltonian. And it is derived from the Hamilton's equation V dot. You can derive it. And by putting H effective equal to 0, because we have to solve for the Hamiltonian constraint. And H square, as you see in the modified Friedmann equation, is Hubble rate, which is A dot square by A square. And the you can see like the loop quantum modification is in 1 minus rho by rho critical. So if where rho critical is given by this particular fraction, which is obtained from the quantum theory, and it is equal to 0.41 times rho Planck. Similarly, you can find the Hamilton's equation for beta dot, and you can find the modified Rice-Chaudhry equation, which is the next equation.
Param?
Hello?
One question. When you say matter, you just mean a scalar field?
No, when I mean matter, I mean any matter.
So if you have like fermions that were coupled to the connection, you would also not expect...
I'm not including fermions. Like,
okay, so you just mean bosonic matter.
Yes,
say.
Absolutely. And Niyesh has a question, so you want to ask?
I was just wondering, is this only first order in rho divided by rho critical all order?
No, this is exact. Yeah, there is no... given that Hamiltonian, you can derive these equations exactly without any approximation. And there is no further correction. If the Hamiltonian itself has a correction, then there will be further correction. But the claim is that given this Hamiltonian, if we look at the numerical simulations and we look at consider the states which lead to a macroscopic universe at late times, actually these equations mimic quantum dynamics excellently. Like this is what happens for many of the situations. Okay? So since the quantum geometry only affects the gravitational part, it does not affect the matter part, it's very straightforward to see that we'll again get the same conservation equation as in the classical theory, and there will be no change to the equation of state of the matter. And these three equations, the conservation law, the modified Rice-Chaudhry, and the modified Friedmann, they form a closed set. Given any two equations, you can find the third equation, which points to the consistency of the effective dynamics. Okay, so now let's go to the slide 8. What are the features of the effective dynamics? So let us see them. So we saw that Hubble's square equation has a rho 1 minus rho by rho critical term. So something which is completely obvious from that equation, the modified Friedmann equation, is that energy density has a supremum, which is rho critical. It can never become greater than rho critical. Otherwise, H square will become, otherwise Hubble will become imaginary. And one can find that the Hubble rate has an upper bound. It's a global upper bound, H maximum, which is given by this particular expression. And this is for all matter. Like, we are not restricting matter at all here. Secondly, when energy density becomes equal to the critical energy density, the Hubble rate vanishes because there was a 1 minus rho by rho critical term. It goes to 0. Hubble vanishes. And the fate of the universe is determined by the Rice-Chaudhry equation because we can find the Rice-Chaudhry equation in that case. And that is given by A double dot by A equal to this expression, 4 pi g 1 plus W rho critical. So W is P by rho. W need not be constant. It's just like I'm just using an ansatz here that P is equal to W rho. Now for the matter, this satisfies null energy condition, excluding the case of cosmological constant in this discussion, which is juristically complete. So all matter which satisfies null energy condition, W is greater than minus 1, and we find that A double dot by A will be greater than 0. So when energy density becomes equal to critical energy density, A double dot by A is greater than 0, that means the universe forms it. Whereas if we have a matter which violates null energy condition, that is W is less than minus 1, A double dot A by A will be negative, and the universe will recollapse. So that's the first thing. So when rho reaches rho critical, we have to look at the Wright-Chaudhry equation, and we'll figure out whether the universe bounces or recollapses. And we see, like, it depends on whether the matter violates null energy condition or it does not violate null energy condition. Now, the third point is that there exists a critical value of the scale factor well isolated from the values at which energy density diverges classically. And this should be also obvious. It's straightforward to see because we can only have, we can never have a divergence in energy density because the upper bound is given by rho critical in this case. So this can be shown in general, what I'm going to claim. But as an example, just for this talk, one can take W equal to constant, one can integrate the conservation law, and one will find that A critical is given by this particular equation, A naught, rho critical by rho naught, where A naught and rho naught are some initial data or some reference data which you have given to integrate the conservation law. And A critical is always greater than 0. It cannot go to 0. And similarly, you can show for all the cases that wherever in the classical theory, there was a divergence in the scale factor, there was a divergence in the energy density at a particular value of the scale factor, that value of the scale factor will be excluded from the effective spacetime of LQC. One can prove that. So this is just an example that for W equal to constant, this is what happens, that A critical is greater than 0. So which we can just note that it, A critical never vanishes. OK, let's go to the slide number 9. Let's look at the spacetime curvature, which we can find for the Robertson-Walker metric. So this is standard Robert Wall material. This, we find the Ricci scalar, and since it's a homogeneous isotropic spacetime, knowing Ricci scalar is enough. Once you know Ricci scalar, you know all higher order curvature invariants because of the spacetime symmetry in this model, and the while is zero. So this is, once you know Ricci, you know Kreshman and so on, everything you know. It's enough to get the understanding. So Ricci is given by 6 h, Ricci scalar is given by 6 h squared plus a double dot by a, and we can use the modified dynamical equations, and we get this expression on the right hand side. And one thing which is completely clear from this expression is that energy density cannot become greater than rho critical, which we already know. If you have matter which is well-behaved such that an equation of state of the matter does not diverge at any point in the effective spacetime, the spacetime curvature will be always bounded. Only in the special case where in the effective spacetime equation of state will diverge, spacetime curvature will not be bounded. This is just from this equation. And people may think like, oh, this is anyway a very pathological case. Like, why do we have such an ill-behaved matter? But it may occur in some physically interesting situations. And what I'll do in this talk is I'm not going to restrict any matter using energy conditions. I'll allow everything, whatever is possible. I'll just put everything in that matter and do the analysis. Like some of the singularities which I will talk about may be completely ruled out by fiat just by considering the matter Hamiltonians and whether we can quantize or not. But I'll not make that assumption. I'll keep the analysis as general as possible. Another thing which is clear from this expression for spacetime curvature is that for all matter which satisfies null energy condition, the maximum of spacetime curvature is reached for the value which is taken by the massless scalar. And that value is given by mod r equal to 48 pi g rho critical. Well, rho critical is 0.41 times rho Planck. And It is quite clear that when rho becomes much less than rho critical, the dynamics, the, all the effective equations just reduce to the classical theory. For example, like h squared just becomes 8 pi g rho by 3, and the modified Wright-Chaudhry equation is given by a double dot by a equal to Wright-Chaudhry equation is given by minus 4 pi g by 3 rho plus 3 p. And actually, the numerical simulations which have been done for some of the models, they show that general relativity is already a very good approximation to the quantum dynamics, to the full quantum dynamics, when rho is of the order of 0.01 rho Planck. So you don't. So this is the kind of the scale we are looking at that we see in many of the models. That when we reach this kind of energy density, we can start using the we can forget about the modified dynamical equations. Just take the equations from classical GR, and they give a good approximation to quantum dynamics. So let's come to. So I think like before I go to the next slide. If there are any doubts or questions, I'll take them here because I'll shift the gear from here.
Okay, Paramdeep Abhay, I just want to clarify. In the top, you have the top equation, and below that you have some sentences. And you say that is when the pressure diverges with energy density going to zero, then there's a problem. But in fact, pressure could diverge with energy density being finite.
Yes, that's completely true. I'm sorry for that.
Okay, or the pressure could be finite and the energy density could go to zero. In both those cases, there is a problem.
Yeah, so you're completely right. I agree. Laurent, you have a question?
I have a technical question. In your Hamiltonian, there was a parameter lambda.
Yeah.
Where is it?
So Laurent's question is, where is lambda? And the lambda is in rho critical. So if you don't fix lambda by the area gap, then that means your rho critical will have the lambda and you can play with it. Okay?
I have a related question. Okay, so what happened in the sign in there? There was a sign of lambda beta in the Hamiltonian. Why isn't it the equation?
Okay, so the Niesh has asked a question that what happened to the sinusoidal function. So let's go to the slide number 7. So what you can show using the identity is that, so the question is that what happened to the sinusoidal function? So what you have to do is that you have to put H effective equal to 0, and then you can express sine square lambda beta in terms of H matter. Okay? And sine square lambda beta can be written as rho, because it's easy to see. Sine square lambda beta by lambda square is like rho. And then when you solve for the V dot equation, you get a similar term, which gives you a 1 minus cos, 1 minus sine square, and that is what gives you 1 minus rho by rho critical. Okay, so in that sense, it is exact. So it's half-page calculation, but it can be done. So there are no other questions. I will assume that everything is clear, and so far, this is the premise I'm working with, nothing else. So if anything goes wrong, none of the conclusions will hold. So let's go to the second part of the talk. And I'll now tell you about the singularities which theoretical cosmologists have found in the last couple of years. This is slide number 10, types of singularities, complete classification. So Big Bang and Big Crunch are well-known singularities. And these are the singularities at which the scale factor vanishes in finite time, energy density diverges, and all of the curvature invariants diverge. Essentially, it means the Ricci scalar diverges. And so inevitable fate of matter which satisfies null energy condition, except the case of cosmological constant, which is a special case. So, but since the beginning of this millennium, like many singularities have been discovered in classical cosmology, and these all refer to the homogeneous classical FRW cosmology. Like, I'm not talking about anisotropic models here or inhomogeneous models here. So first of them was type 1 singularity, which is called Big Rip. And this classification, type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4, I will tell you from where I have taken. It's not my classification. It's well-known classification. So the first of them is the Big Rip singularity. And the Big Rip singularity is common in some class of dark energy models, which violate null energy condition. And these occur at, all these singularities are space-like singularities. All these occur at finite time. So in the Big Rip singularity, the scale factor, instead of going to zero, it diverges. The energy density diverges, the pressure diverges, and all curvature invariants diverge. And these singularities, that when the extreme event is being reached, the dominant energy condition is violated. So since everything, including the scale factor, diverge, this is known as the ripping singularity. The universe just rips apart in finite time. Then there are singularities which are called type 2 singularities, which are sudden singularities, which were discovered by John Barrow and his co-workers since 2002. And these occur not at scale factor going to zero or scale factor going to infinity. They occur at scale factor taking a finite value. So as the singularity is approached, one of the characteristics of these singularities is that the energy density vanishes and the pressure diverges. Since the pressure is diverging, the space-time curvature also diverges, because the space-time curvature or the Ricci scalar depends both on energy density and pressure. So it's not sufficient that the energy density going to zero will control the divergence of curvature. So this pressure diverges and space-time curvature diverges. And the energy conditions may be violated or may not be violated near the singularity. You can always choose. It depends on the initial data. Then there are type 3 singularities, which are kind of a hybrid of type 1 and type 2 singularities. These singularities occur at a finite value of the scale factor. And in these cases, energy density, pressure, and curvature invariants diverge. So type 1, type 2, type 3, and Big Bang, Big Crunch, they saturate all kind of curvature divergence singularities which you can write. Like, you can You can say, like, I want to classify the singularities using energy density, pressure, and scale factor. And whatever you give me, it will fall in the first four classes. There is no other way you can write it. Type 4 singularities should actually not even be called singularities because they are not curvature divergent singularities. What happens is that at a finite value of scale factor, energy density, pressure, space-time curvature, everything is well-behaved and finite. However, one of the derivatives of curvature will diverge. Let us say R dot diverges. So it's a curvature derivative divergent event, extremal event. I think like one has to be also careful like calling some of these as singularities and some of them not as singularities. It will become later in clear later in the talk that some of them are actually not singularities. So, but at the moment, I'll stick to this classification. It may be confusing, but it is actually useful. So now let's come to slide number 11.
What is the difference between type 1 and type 3? Because in both cases, energy density, pressure, and curvature vary and diverge.
Yeah, so in the type 1 case, the singularity is not sudden in the sense that it occurs when the scale factor also diverges.
Okay.
So type 3 is a hybrid of type 1 and type 2.
Yeah, thank you.
So these are we are on slide number 11, so which is the various works on future singularities in loop quantum cosmology context. Like, if you look at the literature of future singularities, there are more than 300 papers. But like, this is just like, these number of papers have appeared for loop quantum cosmology in some context or another. So one of the first works, which was very phenomenological, was by myself, Mohammad Sami and Shinji Sujikawa in 2006, where we considered the effective Hamiltonian the way we are considering. And we showed that if we consider some phantom models with W less than minus 1, then the type 1 singularity or the big rip singularity can be avoided. And we also pointed out that maybe it's a generic feature, but it was a very model-dependent analysis. Then it was followed by Samart and Gamjudupai and Naskar and Ward, and they considered the phantom dynamics with some other model, and they again showed the type 1 is resolved. Then there was another work by Wu Zhang and Fu Wu and Yu, in which they also showed that for interacting phantom models, the type 1 is generically resolved. In 2007, there was a work by Kamenschik, Klaus Kiefer, and Sandhofer. Actually, that work was more on the Wheeler-DeWitt quantization, but they also test some quantization aspects of loop quantum cosmology in relation to the type 2 singularities. I think the most important work, which at least like I find it very, very interesting, appeared this year by the Postmoth group, Kaleto, Cordoso, Vanderstoot, and Vance. What they do is they consider unbounded exponential potential in a phantom model. So this model, what they consider, has a type 1 singularity in the classical theory. So classically, if you look at the dynamics, it's a big rip. What they found is that when they try to look at the effective dynamics, the type 1 singularity disappears, but there is a type 2 singularity. So type 1 singularity, recall that it means energy density and pressure diverging. Type 2 singularity means energy density either going to zero or finite, but pressure diverging. So as expected, loop quantum cosmology controls the divergence of energy density. It doesn't touch the pressure, but space-time curvature still diverges in this case. So so this is why it's a counterexample to the, if we have a hypothesis that quantum geometry controls space-time curvature. And the conclusions were not very clear. They thought like maybe it's too much of a exotic potential or a model, and maybe like the matter is very unphysical, maybe the effective equations are breaking down and so on. But we will see like what is actually happening in this case. So what I want to say is that so far we had these kind of works which appeared. Okay, let's come to slide number 12. And now I will consider a model. It's a general matter model. This is just for illustration. None of the conclusions are derived from this model. This is just to give you some pictures, just to give you some plots to think of what are these singularities. So this is the model which was given by Nojiri, Odensov, and Sujikawa, and these were the guys who actually in this model classified type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4, and so on. This model is based on a very general ansatz, which is P equal to minus rho minus F of rho, where F of rho is the function on the right-hand side. Why I call it general is because unlike all the other models, this model is very nice that if we just change the values of A, B, and alpha, which are the parameters of the model, we change the singularity. So you don't have to go to another model to look at another singularity. Take this model, just change the parameters, and you can just churn out the singularities you like. So this is why this is a nice model to study phenomenologically, just for the illustration of this work. So what we can do is that we have this model and we can use the conservation law and we can find out that energy density is a function of A. A naught is some initial scale factor which at which you specify the initial data is used to integrate the conservation law. And then this is the model and we use this model to probe the dynamics and properties of curvature invariant R using modified Friedman-Raichaudhuri equation and the R dot equation, because we are also interested to look at the curvature derivative divergent singularities. So as I said earlier, due to the symmetries of the space-time we are considering, investigating the behavior of Ricci scalar is sufficient to understand all higher order invariants of curvature. Let's go to slide 13. So now I'll show you the type 1 singularity in this model. So in this, this singularity occurs when the values of alpha are between 3 by 4 and 1 and A is positive. So there are two plots on this slide. The dashed red curve will always be the classical curve. The blue curve will always be the LQC curve or the effective LQC curve. Now, classically, the model has actually no singularity. The plot on the left-hand side is not, the scale factor is not actually zero, but it's like around 10,000 or something there. So the classical model has no initial singularity. There is only a future singularity. The future singularity is in the sense that if you look at the classical curve, if A goes to infinity, Hubble will go to infinity. And similarly, if you look at the Ricci, Ricci goes to infinity when the scale factor goes to infinity. So it's a type 1 singularity. The scale factor will go to infinity. Hubble will go to infinity. Ricci will go to infinity. What happens is, in LQC, is that since there is an upper bound on energy density, when energy density, which is diverging classically, it reaches rho critical, the universe will recollapse. This is what we expect. And this is what happens. And that is why the blue curve on the left-hand side is bounded. The Hubble is always bounded, because I told you that there is an upper maxima on the Hubble coming from the effective dynamics. And the Ricci curve is also bounded. So Ricci just takes this particular value and then it comes back. It doesn't diverge. It's bounded and finite. So that is why one can show that the classical big rip is avoided. For you can choose any values of parameters here and it will work. Okay? So this is actually in the same way as many works were done on the type 1 singularities, and they showed that big rip is avoided because energy density cannot diverge. And before the universe will hit a big rip, the universe will actually recollapse. So this is what is happening. It's not any surprise. Let's go to slide number 14, which is a type 2 singularity, quote-unquote singularity, and it is not resolved. So I'll show you why it is not resolved. So the necessary condition for the model to give a type 2 singularity, which is a sudden singularity, is that A by B should be negative. So now there are two plots again. The classical curve is a red curve. So you can see in the Hubble plot that there is a singularity, there is an initial singularity, which is a big bang. If you look at the LQC plot, there is no initial singularity because there is a bounce, because energy density diverges in the initial time in this whole example. And since there is a supremum on the energy density, the universe will bounce at the initial scale, which is given by the around 4,500 on the A plot. But what happens is, and you can also see this in the second plot, which is a space-time curvature plot, the space-time curvature diverges at the big bang. But it is having the finite value, which is at A equal to 4,500. Now what happens at the late times? At the late times, the type 2 singularity is such that the energy density is going to zero. So we expect that the LQC modifications will not play any role because they are tied to the energy density. So we also expect that the dynamics, effective dynamics, should look like the classical dynamics. So that is what is happening. So at late times, which is the future singularity is at 10,000 of the scale factor. Well, the plot should actually go to zero, but this is because of the Mathematica that there is some accuracy involved, some inaccuracy involved. So that is why the plot is not going to zero, actually, the Hubble plot. But you can easily see that in the near the extremal event 10,000, the LQC and the classical curve agree. So which is expected because energy density is going to zero and we should get the agreement with the classical GR. You can also see in the second plot, which is the R plot, the space-time curvature is diverging at A equal to 10,000. So this is an explicit example that the space-time curvature's divergence is not controlled by quantum geometry. So this generalizes the conclusion by Kaleso-Cardoso and Sudarman. We were having in a particular special case of initial data. But my claim is that whenever you have a type 2 singularity, this is a generic feature, and this can be proved beyond this model. Let's come to slide number 15, which is a type 3 singularity. And this singularity is resolved in LQC. So the parameters are alpha greater than 1. So in the classical theory, the energy density, pressure, Hubble, Ricci, everything diverges as scale factor tends to A0. So here, there is no A0 in this plot. It will be somewhere around 10,000 again. But you can see that the Hubble is diverging classically. And when the energy density diverges and it's approaching the certain, approaching the scale factor A0, before that, the quantum effects come into the play. When energy density reaches rho critical, the universe recollapses. So it happens similarly in the Big Rip. The only difference is that in the Big Rip or in the type 1, the classical singularity was at A equal to infinity. In this case, the classical singularity is at some finite value of the scale factor. Before the universe reaches that scale factor, the universe actually recollapses. And that point is excluded from the effective space-time. So similarly, the space-time curvature plot, you can see the space-time curvature red curve diverges, actually. But the space-time curvature will be finite in LQC. And the claim is that all curvature invariants and the Hubble are bounded in loop 1 of the small g. So type 3 singularities, we never had any explicit example before, even in the effective dynamics. So this is this adds to the earlier result that the type 3 singularity is resolved. Let's come to the final class, which is the type 4 singularity, and quote-unquote singularity, and it's also not resolved. So the parameters are alpha lying between 0 and half. And depending on what is the value of the parameter alpha, one determines what is the order of the derivative of r which diverges. So in these plots, I have chosen alpha as 1 divided by 4.1. And for this particular value, it's the r dot which diverges. So in this singularity, classically, the Hubble, Ricci, pressure, everything is finite as the singularity is approached. So you can see that there are two singularities, a Big Bang singularity initially, which is resolved by big bounds. And later on, when energy density is going to zero, there is a great agreement between classical GR and LQC, and they are both giving the same answer. So what happens is that if you compute R dot in this particular case, R dot diverges. Space-time curvature plot I have not shown, but it's finite and bounded, but the R dot diverges. So if we consider this as a singularity, LQC does not resolve this curvature derivative singularity. So if there are any questions so far on this model, I will take them now.
Just a general question. So you're saying it's not possible to evolve the gravitational field through one of these singularities?
That's a very good question. So the question is whether you can evolve whether the space-time is extensible beyond the singularities. So I'll come to the answer, but that's the whole answer for this question. So you'll have to wait for a couple of slides.
I have a separate question.
So let's come to the conclusion of this model. What we have seen for this model, but as I said earlier, this model is just to generate plots. Like the conclusions are much more general. What we have seen is that LQC resolves singularities in all those cases where energy density is infinite. The scale factor at which divergence occurs is excluded from the effective spacetime. Be it A equal to zero, be it A equal to infinity, be it A equal to finite. It is always excluded. And this always happens for Big Bang, Big Crunch, type 1, and type 3 singularities. All these are singularities where energy density blows up. In type 2 singularities, in the model, energy density went to 0 and the pressure can go to plus minus infinity depending on the values of the parameters. And that is why the space-time curvature diverges at a finite value of the scale factor. Since dynamical equations approximate those of classical GR when energy density is less than rho critical, it's not surprising that quantum geometry does not resolve type 2 singularity. So this should not come as a surprise. The lesson is there can exist events for which quantum geometry will not control space-time curvature. Type 4 singularities are not even curvature divergent singularities. They are only the derivatives of curvature diverge. Since these also occur when energy density goes to zero, quantum geometry effects play no role to resolve type 4 singularities. I think like we have to pause here now and we have to ask the question which was being asked, like when is actually a singularity really a singularity? So let's go to this question. Let's go to the basics. So I have shown you all the examples and complete classification. But we have to, we should actually like look back here what happened in GR. So what is a singularity? Singularity is the boundary of space-time which can be reached by an observer in finite time, but beyond
what slide, what slide are you on?
I'm on slide 19. So this issue of singularities has been debated a lot when people were trying to prove cosmic censorship theorems and so on. And people were trying to understand what is the singularities. It was a subject of a very active debate, and a lot of work has been done. And I think I would like to point out that this beautiful work by Bob Garrosh, which was part of his PhD thesis, in which he debates between Salvetti and Sagredo what is a singularity in GR. And the main things we already know. The point is, a singularity is a boundary of the space-time, which can be reached by observer in a finite time, but beyond which space-time cannot be extended. That's the definition. Nothing else. Hawking, Penrose, Garrosh incompleteness theorem states, basically are the sense is that existence of geodesics, which cannot be continued to arbitrary values of the fine parameter. So as I said, like in this very nice debate which Bob Garrosh writes, Sagredo concludes that a space-time is singularity-free if it is geodesically complete. That's the main idea. There is no other thing. So we have to look at the geodesics. And for the Robertson-Walker metric, we can find out the geodesic equations very easily. And they turn out to be, so the prime here is with the derivative with respect to the affine parameter tau, which you can take as a proper time also. And the first geodesic equation is for the r coordinate, which is a square r prime equal to chi. Chi is some constant. And t prime square equal to epsilon plus chi square a square. Epsilon is equal to 0 for null geodesics, and epsilon is equal to 1 for particle geodesics. And using these two equations, we can also write another equation, which is useful, which is t double prime equal to minus h, the Hubble rate, t prime square minus epsilon. So something is completely obvious from these geodesic equations. That is, that these equations break down only when scale factor goes to 0 or the Hubble is diverging. In all other cases, geodesic equations will not break down. But geodesic equations, though they capture the soul of the singularities, sometimes it's useful to go beyond that. And there are reasons for that, and it will become clear. So what we have to also see is that what is the nature of singularities? What is actually happening at the singularity? If you throw an observer, if you throw a detector at the singularity or the extremal event, what actually happens to it? Is it completely destroyed? What happens? So this was the thing which was pioneered by Ellis and Schmidt. The reason for this was that even in classical GR, there exist scenarios at which the space-time curvature diverges, but there is no physical singularity. So this happens, for example, for the case of shell-focusing singularities or shell-crossing singularities. The space-time curvature diverges, but there is no physical singularity there. So this was the reason when people were trying to prove cosmic censorship theorems, they came up with the ideas of when is the singularity actually relevant. And they came with the notion of a strong singularity. A singularity is strong if infalling objects or observer with his or her operators experience infinite tidal force and are thus destroyed irrespective of any physical properties of the observer or the apparatus. You take any apparatus, infinite, like however strong it can be, it will be completely destroyed. That is the characteristic of a strong singularity. If it doesn't happen, then the singularity is weak. So the weak singularities are the one which will allow the passage of strong detectors. So you can always build up a strong detector. This is what people were actually trying to prove when they were looking at the shell-focusing singularities, that you can make strong enough detectors which will go through these shell-focusing singularities. So these are not actually the real singularities. It's just a matter of what breaks up when the curvature is diverging. It's not generically true. So Clark and Clorac, they actually wrote down the conditions. When is the singularity really strong? So this idea of Ellis and Schmidt about strong singularities was made very precise by the work of Tipler and by Clorac. So the Tipler's criteria says that in the FRW case, a singularity is strong if the volume vanishes or it diverges. So it involves a double integral over the Ricci tensor. U is the velocity of the geodesics and tau is the fine parameter. So you can see that Ricci tensor, the components of the Ricci, will have the terms which are maximally the second derivatives of the scale factor. So if you integrate twice over the time, you will get the restrictions on the scale factor itself. Clorac's criteria is less restrictive than the Tipler because it's not a restriction on the scale factor itself, but it's a restriction on the velocity of the scale factor on the A dot. So Clorac's criteria says that if the singularity is strong if the following integral diverges. So if you look at the Ricci tensor again, the components of the Ricci tensor, with the maximum derivative terms higher order derivative terms, you'll have our A double dot. You integrate once over time, you'll get A dots. So that everything boils down to A dots. So the singularity is strong if both the integrals are infinite. Otherwise, the singularity is weak. If the singularity is weak, in principle, the detectors can pass through. So now let's see what is the situation for the classification we gave you. So it turns out that Big Bang, Big Crunch, Type 1, and Type 3 singularities have a divergence in Hubble.
Next
because
slide,
the density was diverging, Hubble diverges. And they have a vanishing scale factor or a going to infinity. Only for Type 3 there was a sudden event, but again the Hubble diverges. So geodesic equations necessarily break down in all these cases. And you can also compute the strength integrals. We are on slide 21 now. So we can also compute the Tipler and Krolak integrals. And we can show that they are infinite. The reason they are infinite is because I told you that the so for example, we can take the case of type 1 singularity. The type 1 singularity has divergence in Hubble and A going to infinity. So if the Hubble diverges, the Krolak integral diverges. So these are the events beyond which geodesics cannot be extended. Geodesic equations are broken down for these events. They cannot be extended beyond these events. And these are strong curvature singularities. So these are, in a sense of Ellis, Schmidt, Tipler, and Krolak, these are the real singularities, the physical singularities. Now type 2 and type 4 singularities, they occur at a finite value of scale factor with Hubble finite. This is their characteristic. Geodesic equations do not break down, and one can show that both Tipler and Krolak integrals are finite. So this is the work which was done in GR, in classical cosmology in 2006, when people were trying to understand these future singularities. Fernandez, Jambrina, and Lascaux, they actually proved it, that these type 2 singularities or type 4 singularities are not actually the real singularities, because you can extend the geodesics beyond these events, and these are weak curvature singularities. So these are the events beyond which geodesics can be extended, because geodesic equations don't break down, dynamical equations don't break down, and which are weak curvature singularities. Now in general what happens is that in most of the scenarios, if you have a type 2 singularity, there is a strong curvature singularity in the past. So just the fact that you can extend the events beyond the type 2 singularity does not mean that your spacetime is geodesically complete. In classical GR, what will happen is that your spacetime will be still geodesically incomplete, because there will be another singularity in the evolution beyond which you will not be able to extend geodesics. So this is very clear. And this situation changes in LQC. So the first thing which we, like if we already know the information we have gathered, for the type 2 and type 4, the behavior was very similar in LQC and GR. So these things just go through. Okay, so let's come to the reserve from a general analysis. And this slide is only for LQC, only in the context of LQC. So I will not prove you the general, in general, but you'll have to test me that this is all true. So you'll have to look at my paper for the more detailed proof. So what happens is that in LQC, Hubble is bounded above. I showed you the Hubble bound. Scale factor never vanishes. I showed you the acritical. It is well isolated from 0, infinity, and the extremal values. And for all Hubble divergent singularities, there exists a critical value of the scale factor at which bounce or recollapse takes place. That's a fact. You can prove it in very general. All the singular values of the scale factor are thus excluded from the effective spacetime. And dynamical equations never break down. So what results one gets from LQC are that the quantum geometry binds the extrinsic curvature for all these singularities. There exists no strong curvature singularity. The reason is because Hubble has always a maximum. For a strong curvature singularity, you need at least Hubble to diverge. And if you can show that Tipler and Krolak integrals are always finite, they don't diverge, geodesic equations do not break down, because the first of all, Hubble has a bound, and scale factor never goes to zero in LQC. So you can always extend geodesics beyond these events. First of all, these events are excluded, so the geodesic equations don't break down. Now, the second point is that evolution near type 2 and type 4 singularities mimics the one in the classical theory. I showed you the plots as an example that it happens. The answer is that the basic reason is that rho energy density is much smaller than rho critical. The Hubble is bounded and the singularity occurs at a finite scale factor. Even classically, geodesics can be extended beyond these events. And what actually I think is very beautiful part of the whole game is that the quantum geometry completely ignores these weak curvature singularities. So we saw that when weak curvature singularity was being approached, quantum geometry did nothing. Like, it just let the classical theory do its job. So quantum geometry somehow knows that what it doesn't have to resolve, it doesn't repair something which is not broken in a way. So it does not overkill. So we can combine all these results and we can actually prove that geodesics can be extended to arbitrary values of the affine parameter for all events, for all matter types, to arbitrary values of the affine parameter. So the effective spacetime in LQC turns out to be geodesically complete. And why it was a problem in the classical cosmology was because of the existence of the strong curvature singularities, which I just excluded. Weak curvature singularities were not even a problem because geodesic can be extended. Since we excluded the strong curvature singularities, and the behavior near weak curvature singularity is like in GR, one can actually prove that the space-time is geodesically complete. Okay, so now let me come to the summary. So I'll reiterate, this is the assumption was we assumed effective Hamiltonian as it is. Like it may be completely wrong, or one has to add more corrections to it. But assuming that the effective equations are valid for a general matter model, we analyzed in detail the nature and strength of all possible cosmological singularities and behavior of geodesics in the k equal to 0 flat model. We did not restrict any matter using energy condition. So second point was quite well known and trusted, that the issue of the traditional past, which I mean by the Big Bang and Big Crunch, was investigated in detail for various models. And it was shown that the bounce is generic in various situations at an effective level and in the situations where you have a complete theory. All the singularities which involve divergence of energy density or Hubble are resolved. And the basic reason is that there is a maxima of the Hubble which you can take in the effective space-time. I think that one of the lessons is that there can exist physically interesting scenarios, which are the type 2 and type 4 singularities in GR, where this should be only a type 2 singularity here, because type 4 singularity, there is no divergence in curvature. So in the point 4, like there can exist like type 2 extremal events, where the space-time curvature may diverge, and the quantum geometry will play no role in controlling that space-time curvature divergence. But these are harmless events. Like as in classical GR, when people were trying to prove cosmic censorship theorems, they encountered certain singularities where space-time curvature diverges, but they are not physical singularities. These also turn out to be not physical singularities. So we should not be afraid of that. What happens is that in the fifth point, as I say, like strong curvature singularities may be completely eliminated, or what happens is they can be tamed to the weak ones. So this is what happened in the work of Coletto, Cardoso, Wendos, Ludenwein. So if you recall, they started with a type 1 singularity. They found that quantum geometry converts it to type 2. So quantum geometry is being lazy here. It just does the minimal to resolve the singularity. It didn't eliminate the strong curvature singularity there. It just converted to a weak one. And weak one is harmless. It knows. And what one can prove is that in this whole picture, assuming the effective dynamics, assuming that they don't break down, assuming the flat content, the space-time is geodesically complete. So now I'll just finish with the further direction. So one of the questions is that can these results be extended to richer space-times? So answer for some of them is quite straightforward. So we can extend them to the k equal to 1 and minus 1 models and Bianchi 1 and isotropic models. So it should be very straightforward. It can be done. And I think it should be also possible to try to consider the Gaudi models in this setting. I would like to certainly go beyond what has been done, but a lot of work is needed, and we would like to understand what control we have on the effective equations, how to consider the state-dependent properties. And this is the second point which I have written, that we have to study the consequences of higher-order state-dependent corrections. And these questions should be asked again. These are just like the first step to try to understand the behavior of geodesics and singularity resolution. The third point is that this study can also have very useful lessons for the full theory in the context of constraints on quantization ambiguities. So what my claim is that this generic singularity resolution, which we see here in this model, is very much tied to the way we have quantized the Hamiltonian constraint. So if somebody comes up with another quantization, which doesn't give physics which is equivalent to improved dynamics of loop quantum cosmology, which we already know from other results that it is very unique because it is the only known way to get a correct ultraviolet and infrared limit and the independence on the fiducial structure and so on. What will happen is that we will not get geodesic completeness. Generic geodesic completeness. You take any other quantization, don't choose beta or V variables, choose something else. And you can try to play this whole game and one will not be able to prove the generic result. So what are the lessons in general? I think like for me, the biggest lesson was that we have to be very careful in asking when is the singularity resolved. And the important aspect of the singularity resolution is geodesic completeness. And if we have geodesic completeness, we have a singularity-free space, as Bob Geroff says. And curvature boundedness, as in classical GR, and here can be misleading in some situations. And the examples are the case of the type 2. There is no type 4. I'm sorry, like this is a typo here. Only for the type 2 extremal events, the quantum geometry will not find the space-time curvature. So when we try to quantize, we should not be aiming the quantization towards that we have to, or we should not expect that quantization will always give a bound on the space-time curvature. It may not give, and yet everything may be fine. So this is the lesson. I think I'll stop here.
Questions? So I have a couple of questions. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So if you go back to slide 22, when you look at the second bullet, so when you say that the type of weak singularities are due to effects of the pressure, could those effects be perhaps eliminated if one used full quantum matter in the model?
Absolutely. So I
shared 21 it was.
Yeah. So as I said, I'm assuming, I'm not restricting the energy conditions at all. So even in we can take for an example the model of Kaleto, Cardoso, Vandersloot, and Van. They had unbounded exponential potential, which was negative potential. It is unbounded, and I don't think that there will be a quantum theory for that. But it's a very delicate question because people in theoretical cosmology have tried to cook models in which or situations in which this may not always be true. So this was my first belief that okay, like these guys have found this curvature unbounded, and maybe like this is just because of unphysical matter. But it's very difficult to prove in general that this will be always the case.
And my second question was that there was this piece of work by Thomas Thiemann and Johannes Brunmann on looking at singularity resolution in the full theory, in which they proved that in general it doesn't seem like the inverse scale factor was bounded, but if you look at sort of coherent homogeneous states, it was. Perhaps that would open a framework for you to revisit all these questions you brought up in the sort of full 3D case?
Yes. So your question is like when we can include the inverse scale factors or?
No, I mean, I was just saying that perhaps is a comment more than a question, that the framework that Thomas and Johannes introduced could allow you to probe your results in this talk in the full 3D case.
Yes, that is true. It can be done.
Any other questions?
Param, if you go to the last slide. So the first bullet in the last slide about possibly extending these results. But is anything known even in the classical theory? I mean, you gave what you said was a complete classification in the homogeneous isotropic models of singularities. I mean, is there any analysis like this inhomogeneous models?
No. So when
if you look at the models which are homogeneous but anisotropic, in that case, does one know anything about what kinds of singularities can arise if you allow all possible matter?
Okay, so that's a very good question. I don't think it is completely clear. So let me first clarify what I meant by this bullet. What I meant was to show that one can have a juristic completeness. What I gave as an example in the model or the classification, I think like we can try to build it ourselves because we know the way we can saturate all the possibilities. Secondly, there is some work on the future singularities for anisotropic models by John Barrow and his collaborators, so we can try to look at it. But what I meant by this bullet was that in order to show geodesic completeness, there can be another strategy which we can completely take, which will be to look at whether we can look at just the properties of geodesics in these spacetimes, and we can look at whether the extrinsic curvature is bounded or not. So that we know, independent of the model or the classification. So that should be possible.
Right. So this is something that we already know if it is matter is some simple thing like scalar field or radiation or something. But you want to say that is the Hubble parameter going to be bounded for all
kinds
of matter fields? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is the approach one can take.
Okay. Thank you.
Pan? This is Carlo from Marseille. I have a very simple question. I got confused when you talk about geodesic completeness in the cosmological case. And are you saying that for the type 2 and 4 singularities, the evolution equations can be extended beyond the singularity in the classical case? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So is that the key difference between the type 2, type 4 on one hand and the other singularities on the other hand?
Yes, that is a key difference.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions?
I just want to say, Param, that this is really very nice. It's going away in some sense from more fundamental calculations, but really making contact with what cosmologists do. So this is a nice bridge between what cosmologists do and, you know, what comes out of loop quantum gravity.
Okay, if there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker again.